Hey, this is Nate Klarfeld, and this is Stonewall Live. The best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Jamie Nabosny, who for many years endured anti-gay bullying at the hands of students at his school in rural Wisconsin. Known to the teachers, but told to lay back and not act so gay, Jamie endured verbal taunts, physical taunts, urination, punches to the stomach until he finally needed surgery. In 1995, Nabosny sued his former school, but a federal judge threw that case out of court, saying a school cannot be sued for that reason. Lambda Legal took on the case and won an appeal, proving that a school could be held accountable for not stopping anti-gay abuse. He is the subject of a fabulous documentary called Bullied, narrated by our own Jane Lynch, which I have seen, and I also met Jamie during one of his high school speeches. And here he is. Jamie, say hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. I am, like, so excited. We met last May at Boyd Anderson High School here in Broward County, Florida, and you spoke to two assemblies, electrically charged, and did you feel any tension in that school when you did it? Because I want to give you a little bit of background about what happened to that school when you did that.
It was an interesting feeling, because obviously it had a very inner city feel, and I've done quite a few inner city schools, but it was a little bit different and probably a little bit more on edge than I was used to going into a school.
You weren't told this, but what happened was about a year before, and I talked to the teacher about this too. I don't believe you ever told this. About a year before, there was a gang uprising and somebody was killed in the front of the school. The Monday of the week you were to be at the school, there you might have been canceled because the trial was starting for the two young gentlemen, and the school may have gone on lockdown. So within 48 hours before your arrival, there was a plea agreement. And so this is what's going on in schools right now, not just anti-gay bullying, but all sorts of things. So that school was
absolutely
charged. Yeah. And I want to go back to my experience of meeting you. Jamie Nabosny is an amazing person. Many of us have been bullied. I've been bullied. My partner's been bullied. I have friends who've been bullied. I could never share with anyone other than a therapist what really happened to me. Yet you open your heart, open your life, and tell the most utterly deep and, for me and many people, embarrassing moments of your life. Where do you get that strength?
I think a lot of it comes from my mother. I had an amazing mother growing up who was extremely supportive of me, and not just after I came out, but had always been very supportive of me. And I think that, you know, one of the things that happened was when the lawsuit was suggested, I asked my mother how she would feel and how my family would feel, because they still lived in my hometown. And my mom said, "You have to fight back, Jamie. You have to fight back for all the kids who can't fight back, who don't have a voice." And so she really was the motivation behind me, you know, fighting back.
And tell us a little bit about, how old were you when the trial started?
When the trial started, I was 18.
Okay, 18 is still pretty young. I mean, you're legally an adult, and you were put on the stand, right?
Correct, and that would have been when I was 20, by the time the trial actually came to be.
Which is still pretty young. You're still not, you know, you still are dealing with a lot of the same emotions. You know, you've come out of the closet, but, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on when you're a gay man. There's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of shame. Were you scared during the trial?
You know, I mean, there was a part of me that was afraid, but there was a part of me that felt so good about being able to get the truth told in front of a jury that was going to judge the people who allowed this to happen to me. And for me, that feeling and that, I mean, that was so motivating and so, you know, almost exciting and electrifying to be able to have all of the stuff come out in front of a jury that was going to make a decision about whether or not these three principals were guilty of failing to protect me, which I obviously knew they were guilty. My family knew, but these people, the jury, had to hear the story, and they had to hear from all of the witnesses. And I was really excited to be able to get that all out there.
But I mean, I watched the movie, you know, sitting right next to you. And weren't you afraid when they were out and out lying, perjuring themselves, that the story would never get out? Some of the principals and the administrators told bold-faced lies in open court. And I mean, if that had happened to me, and these are adults, and I'm a kid, who are they going to believe? I mean, were you ever afraid that the truth was never going to get out?
Well, I knew that the truth would come out, but I wasn't sure what the jury would believe. Because of that very reason, all three of the principals denied. They denied ever seeing me, knowing anything that happened to me. But the problem was that everybody that was testifying, including their own witnesses, testified to the contrary. They said that they did know who I was. There was all the records that showed all of the meetings that we had, all of the other, you know, the issues, the meetings that happened with the school. All of those were public records that they couldn't, I mean, they couldn't deny that. And so I'm not exactly sure what they were trying to do by saying they didn't even know who I was, which is what their, you know, their defense was, because everything that came through was, to the contrary of that.
Right. And let me bring the audience up to speed. Some of the people who bullied you were witnesses that actually said, we all sat in a room, the Nabosnys, myself, my parents, and an administrator, and had this discussion. Yet those administrators sat up in court and said, I don't know who you are. We never talked.
Absolutely. At that point, it was hard to even believe that they were going to try to do that. You know, because we had the parents, one of the mothers that was in the room that day and one of the kids that was in the room that day, both testified that meeting took place, and that, you know, Mrs. Podlesny, the principal of my middle school, said, boys will be boys, and if Jamie's going to be so openly gay, he has to expect this kind of stuff to happen to him.
Right. That is just amazing. You were told not to act so gay, and if you're going to act this gay, these are the consequences. It's a natural, natural consequence.
Absolutely. It's amazing. I mean, and most people, I think, are shocked to hear that. I mean, no matter where you stand on a lot of gay rights issues, I would hope that 99.9% of people would say that kids should have a right to be safe in school, whether they're gay or not. And so for her to be able to say that was just outrageous.
Right. And I'm going to go back to my afternoon or my day with you at Boyd Anderson when you asked the entire assembly how many people felt safe that day at school. Do you remember that moment?
Absolutely.
None of them raised their hand.
And that's the same as at every school that I go to, I ask that question. How many of you think that every student comes to school feeling safe and welcome, and no one raises their hand? And it doesn't matter whether I'm at an inner city school, a suburban school, or a rural school. That is the same response I get, is that the kids know that students are not coming to school feeling safe and welcome, whether you're gay or not. It doesn't matter. Kids are not coming to school feeling that way. And I think it's worse, obviously, if you do identify or you're questioning your sexual orientation or your gender identity.
Why do you think that's happened? Why do you think that schools have become such an unsafe place? I'm 61 years old, so I have so much trouble relating that. Even though I was bullied as a gay person, I didn't think anybody else was being bullied, but it seemed like a safer place for most people. It seemed like everybody else was having a safe time. What do you think has happened?
Well, I think that schools have always been, depending on the school, have always been a place that's not safe for gay, lesbian, bi, and trans people. I mean, I think that's throughout history. And I do think that certain schools were better. I attended a Catholic school for part of my time when I was in the middle school, and I had a great experience there, which is most people are shocked at. But my public school wasn't a safe place, and I don't know why that is. I think there's a lot of different reasons, but I think in private schools, people pay to send their kids there. So schools feel more of a responsibility to do the right thing by kids. In a public school, I really believe that these administrators believed that because I was gay, I deserved what I was getting, and they were going to turn the other way and not do a thing. That's what happened, and they felt that they were justified in doing that.
Wow. I'm going to, you know, we talked a little bit earlier. You speak to between 8 and 12 schools or organizations a month, 120 to 150 appearances a year. Amazing, amazing amount of energy. I'm going to read one of the testimonials that's from your website. I think the listeners would love it. This is from Kevin, who is a high school student. Thank you so much for speaking to my classmates last Monday. You reach the hearts and souls, sorry if that sounds cliche, of even the most conservative people in attendance. As a straight 16-year-old male, I found that it would be typical for me to simply accept bullying as human nature and inevitable. Individuals like you inspire me to be part of the movement towards equal treatment of every human being, no matter what features or traits he or she embodies. That was from a straight student. That's amazing.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, when I got on Facebook and I knew kids would be contacting me, I kind of expected it to look like a Justin Bieber fan club, that I'd have all these teenage girls and a couple of gay boys on there. But one of the things that surprised me is how many of the straight males have contacted me and told me what a difference that I've made at their schools, you know, or even, which to me is more amazing, the ones that write in and say, I've said that so gay, I've called people faggot, I didn't realize how offensive it was, and I'm not going to do it. To me, that makes the work that I'm doing worthwhile. I mean, when I get those messages, I just feel so good that what I'm doing is making that kind of a difference.
Exactly. And the fact that this straight 16-year-old male, which is not a very usually in by demographic an emotive type person, really spoke from his heart here. And you're touching that nerve. How do you get the energy to do 150 shows? I'm going to call them shows because I've seen you at work and it's a show. You're a great inspiration, but it's work. Where do you get that energy?
I don't know. I've never been somebody who can sit still for very long, and so I think that part is natural, I mean, in some sense, but I think that the feedback that I get and the energy that I get back from the crowd really keeps me going, because I can be exhausted at the end of one presentation, and then the question and answer part of what I do usually feeds that energy back into me, because I love hearing from the students. I love getting those questions, hearing from them about what's happening in their school, and that really, I don't know, it feeds me in a way that I guess I need to be fed to keep going.
I'm going to retreat here. Will you tell the story about your uncle and the car?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, go. Okay.
When I was young, my uncle had left and went away and made money. And most of the people in my family stayed around the same area of Wisconsin where I grew up. And when he'd come back to visit, he'd always have a Cadillac. I was obsessed with his Cadillac. I loved, you know, touching all the buttons, playing with the windows, and I would even take naps in the back seat of his car. And so my uncle was gay. He had a partner, and he'd come to visit. And one summer after he'd left, I was 7 years old. He'd left, and I, you know, I of course the whole time he was there playing in his car, and he'd left, and I was sitting with my grandma at her house, and I looked at my grandma and I said, "Grandma, I think I'm a homosexual." It was the word that I heard that people were describing what my uncle was. And my grandma just looked at me, and so sweetly she said, "Honey, you don't have to be gay to have a Cadillac."
Ah.
And so, it was kind of funny. And I think that my grandma just assumed that that's why I wanted to be gay, so I could have a Cadillac. And I'm still waiting. Cadillac has still not sent me a car. I mean, I haven't even gotten, you know, anything from them. So I'm still waiting for that. But
And you've told the story hundreds of times, right?
I have.
I love that story. I wanted the listeners to hear that story. So you came out obviously very early. You were forced probably to come out. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I came out when the harassment started. I mean, one of the things that I think, I mean, I already knew when I was 11 years old at the time that I came out, and that was pretty abnormal in the early 90s for kids to come out that young. Nowadays, it's still probably abnormal, but it's a lot more common than it was then. And, you know, because the harassment was happening, and what ended up happening was that my best friend ended up talking to a social worker about what was happening, because they asked him what was happening, why I was doing this. Why I was wanting to run away, and I was so depressed. And then through that, they kind of came out and asked me in a meeting with my parents and the social worker, and he asked me if I was gay, and I said, "Yes, I am." And that was how, you know, my coming out sort of happened. And for the most part, my mom, you know, cried, and she said, "I've known ever since you were a little kid." It mm-hmm. wasn't a big deal. My dad took a little while. I mean, it was not as easy for him to accept. I think he already knew, but, most straight and I will call my dad a redneck because he was and is. Rednecky guys don't envision their kids are going to grow up to be gay. And so I think it took him a while. But eventually what happened was the harassment that I was going through, his instincts as a father to protect me, I think took over. And then all of a sudden it didn't matter anymore that I was gay. He needed to do his job as a dad to do what he could to protect me.
What a great story. I mean, you should be proud of your parents. I mean, really, you know, no matter how bad your parents, you really think your parents are, your parents were really pretty cool with that.
Absolutely.
You know,
I am very, very fortunate to have the parents that I had.
Yeah, that's great. Let me talk a little bit about the documentary, which came out 2 years ago, am I right? About a couple years? Am I right?
1 year ago this fall, actually. It's only been out for 1 year.
Oops, I'm sorry. I can't do math. You're right. It's just 1 year. I'm looking right at it. It's not 2012 yet, Nate. Don't subtract yet. The documentary is produced by the Southern Poverty Law Center. It is narrated by Jane Lynch. It is part acted out, part documentary, meaning the real people speak, and then you have actors playing you the roles, obviously.
Absolutely.
because it happened over a period of time, and you're no longer 14 and or 19.
Yes.
Or 18. You look fine. You look great for your age. But I'm saying for your age. I love that. I'm 60. I can say those things to people. But what was the response in your community? I don't know if you still are in contact with people up in Ashland. I know you live in Minneapolis. What was the response there when the movie came out last year?
I think the response was it had been quite a few years, obviously, since the trial, and so there was a lot of publicity in the local paper and within the local TV stations, and the response was actually very, very positive and very supportive. I was invited back by the local school district to show me all the changes that they've made and what a better place Ashland is because of my case. You know, they also did a screening of the movie in Washburn, which is right across the bay from Ashland in northern Wisconsin, and it was they actually had a bigger crowd than they had for President Obama's inauguration,
which
was the theater they had showed the inauguration. But they had to do TV broadcasts of the movie out into the lobby of the theater and to the bar next door because so many people showed up. And I don't know how technically they were able to pull that all off. But there was over, I think, 700 people showed up for the screening of the documentary, and the overpouring of support from local people that, I mean, most of who I've never met was just incredible. It was overwhelming. I mean, I was pretty choked up when I had to get up there and speak. So,
wow, that is a great story. That really is. We talked a little bit about the Anoka Hennepin School District, which is very close to where you live. Is that correct?
Correct. Anoka Hennepin is the largest school district in Minnesota, and it's actually just to the northwest of Minneapolis.
Uh-huh. And they are working on, and very controversial, of course, I think it's Michelle Bachmann's district, which is
congressional district, yes.
And the other issue is they are having a very heated discussion now on a gender equality issue. Could you talk about that a little bit? Are you familiar with that case?
Absolutely. Well, Anoka Hennepin has what they refer to as a neutrality policy around sexual orientation and gender identity, which basically under the policy means that you cannot talk about sexual orientation or gender identity in any way other than neutral. So you can't talk about it in a positive way or a negative way. And the problem with that is that they have GLBT kids that go to that school, and when they get harassed, teachers feel like there's a gag order on them to be able to address the harassment in a way that's positive, that really changes things. And so there's really this big controversy about the policy, and the big thing that's caused this controversy is there have been 9 suicides in Anoka Hennepin in the last 2 school years. And I believe 5 of them have been GLBT related, and all 5 of them were bullied because of their sexual orientation. And so there's obviously a problem in the school district, but the school board is controlled by a right-wing Christian school board members who refuse to change the policy despite the fact that these suicides are happening in their school district.
And there is a lawsuit, isn't there?
There is a lawsuit. The same group that produced the film, the Southern Poverty Law Center, that produced my film, Bullied, has teamed up with the National Center for Lesbian Rights to sue on behalf of students who are currently or were in the past couple of years in that school district and were harassed.
Wow, that's it's absolutely amazing to think that, you know, how many years ago. And let me tell the listeners just a little bit about the why your case was so amazing, why it was such a landmark decision. First of all, it was an appeals court which overturned a judge's ruling to throw something out that said that schools are responsible for the safety and welfare of all students, no matter what their gender identity or gender expression is. That and charge them almost $1 million, which is really what kicks them in the butt, because then they can't have bands and cheerleaders and things like that, and it raises their insurance rates for everything else. So that it not only kicked them in the butt, it kicked them in the pocketbook. And
yes,
many school districts looked at this and said, oh, shit, I can say that on internet radio.
Yeah, that's right.
We can say anything we want. And began to formulate anti-bullying campaigns, gender protection and gender expression protection in their bullying policies. And the case was, and I remember the case. I remember when this happened. For me, when I was reading it, it was just so powerful that I knew that it was going to be a big, big deal. And of course it has been. This case has been referred to in school boards all across the country on a monthly, weekly basis. This case is brought up by parents. This case is brought up by lawyers. This case is brought up by concerned school board members, not in that Anoka Hennepin district. But
yeah.
I have trouble saying that name. I'm just too much of an Easterner to do these Indian names. I can do Seminole because they have casinos, but that's about it. I'm sorry, we're laughing about a very serious subject. But your case was for school districts and bullying, it's kind of like the Brown versus Board of Education ruling, because schools are now the school district in Minnesota there is looking at this now that there's a lawsuit that there might be monetary damages, and I think that's just hit school. That's the only way to wake people up. I really believe that
And I think one of the other big things that my case did was it held the three individual principals liable.
Right.
And what that meant is that going forward, when a school district gets sued, they have an insurance company that protects them. But
right.
Individual administrators must have an umbrella policy on, like, their homeowner's policy, or they must purchase a separate policy to protect themselves. Because
right.
In my case, my school district had rules and policies to protect me, but the administrators did not do their job and follow those policies. Wisconsin
right.
was the first state in the country to protect students from harassment because they were of their sexual orientation. That was
uh-huh.
done in 1983. And so what my case established was that if an administrator decides, for whatever reason, not to protect a student, they
right.
are personally responsible for that. And to me, that was a wake-up call for, I think, administrators, because that meant if they don't have an insurance policy, they could lose their house. They could lose all
right.
of their life savings. And
right.
I think that really was a very important part of my case, because otherwise school, you know, they could say, well, we have an insurance company that will protect us. Well, when it's individual,
right.
you know, and I don't care why people protect students. If it's because they're afraid of being sued, then so be it. But
that's
protect
fine.
Students from harassment. That's just period.
Right, exactly. And even if they did have insurance, I just want to make this clear because I did look into this. Once they get a claim, that policy might double in premium the next year.
Absolutely.
Whether it's an injury, whether it's a death on the football field, whether it's a drowning in the swimming pool, or whether it's a student that gets bullied that gets $1 million, that insurance policy is just like your car insurance. When you have an accident, it goes up. So they're
absolutely.
Right, so they've got to raise more money or spend less on what they think is important, and that's what this case focused on. It made something else important. I didn't get our caller. I spoke with the Broward County Sheriff's Office today. They are sponsoring a screening of your movie for teachers, administrators, and adults September the 26th here in Fort Lauderdale at Cinema Paradiso. For information, just get a hold of me at nateklarfeld@gmail.com or Nate Klarfeld on my Facebook, because I think the whole world's on my Facebook page for Stonewall Live. And I'll get you that information on the times and ticket prices, and, of course, students get in free. The Broward County Sheriff's Office here is an incredibly diverse group of people. They have a GLBT liaison that is a good friend of mine. They have, I believe, over 70 out and proud sheriff's deputies that march in all the gay pride parades down here with their SWAT uniforms. I think that's pretty butch.
That's awesome.
And, they also have, I think they have an entire GLBT bicycle team that does the AIDS rides. It's an incredible organization for a redneck state like Florida. But as I said, we're the blueberry in the red state down here in Fort Lauderdale. So,
absolutely.
You are now an adult, a real life grown up, right?
I am. At least I try to act like it sometimes.
Okay, I've got a caller. Hold on.
Bicycle.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Nate, hi, it's Colleen.
Hi, Colleen. Colleen, could you introduce yourself to Jamie and myself?
Sure. Jamie, it's such an honor to hear you, and thank you for everything you've done. Nate just referenced the screening of Bully that's going to take place at the end of September. And
yes.
Just to iterate a little bit more about that, I'm with the Florida Sheriff's Youth Ranches. We provide residential care for at-risk and neglected kids throughout the state of Florida. The Sheriff's Office is hosting, once again, the Bully movie at Cinema Paradiso on September 26th. We have a cocktail reception at 5:30 and great food from Alibi and Bill's, followed by a screening of the movie and then a panel discussion with, once again, Sheriff Al Amberti, our dear friend Captain Rick Wisbicki, and the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League, Anthony Rosenkrantz. So it's really going to be great. Junior Achievement is going to be promoting it throughout the school system. And you guys have been talking about the monetary accountability, which is, I mean, fabulous. Yes, the adults need to nip this in the bud. But I also love what this movie does in terms of education and showing what bullying is and showing what to do about it and not to be a bystander. So thanks to you, thanks to Southern Poverty Law Center, thanks to the Sheriff's Office, and thanks to Nate. So I wish you were in town. It'd be great to see you.
We'll get him here. Don't worry. We'll get him here again. He loves it here.
In the dead of winter.
We'll get him here in the dead of winter.
I moved from Wisconsin.
That'll
to Florida,
be a lot easier.
So. Yeah.
No, I was telling Jamie about how wonderful our Sheriff's Department is down here and how supportive they've been of all of our events. When we opened up the Stonewall Library, the largest gay and lesbian set of library archives and historical documents in the United States, we actually had Sheriff Al Lamberti cut the ribbon for us, help us cut the ribbon, because he's been such a friend to us and our mission of telling the story.
Exactly. And Captain Rick Wisbicki, as you know, heads
right.
up the
Rick's there
anti,
all the time. Right.
Anti-bias task force for this, because we're very focused on this. We need to, not only as a state but within the county. They've distributed over 50,000 DVDs of the movie, and I clarified, Nate, today that every school in the county gets at least one copy of the movie. So
okay,
everyone
I
has access
sure
to it.
I wasn't sure of that. Well, we need to let the teachers in each school, in each classroom know that it's available. I don't think all the teachers know it's available.
Absolutely. And it's available free to anybody in the country who's going to use it for educational purposes
right.
at tolerance.org. And so if anyone's interested in getting it, then go to tolerance.org and order it for free for their school, for their church, for their synagogue, whatever the case may be. If they're using it for educational purposes, they'll send them a copy free.
Good. Good. Listen, we have 1 minute left of the show, and I wanted to ask you, what's next on your plate, Jamie? What's your next big thing?
What's my next big thing? I'm working on several different things. I'm working on a book currently to address bullying. I'm also working on hopefully a Hollywood movie about my story and potentially a reality show about bullying. So there's some things that I've got in the works, and hopefully within the next 6 months to 8 months, we'll see some of those things coming through.
Great. Colleen, thank you so much for calling in. I've been waiting for your phone call. That's September the 26th at Cinema Paradiso. You can get a hold of me through the website, through Stonewall Live, through my blog. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, Jamie, for all you've done for our community and the country. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Good night, all. Bye-bye.
Good night.